Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Nobody does it better. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
What a weekend it was around the Stanley Cup playoffs. Two Canadian teams.
Not so good.
Down to Kyle Billy Jaffe along with us, alongside Scott Morrison. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard. Coming up on the broadcast, we will preview the lone game on the schedule tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That is the Rangers. That is the Washington Capitals. That series is tied up at ones. Randorf, Galley, and Campbell Pascal with the broadcast later on this evening. In the meantime, about the weekend, gentlemen, we'll focus in initially on the Montreal-Tampa game. Yes, we'll get to Brad Watson. Yes, we'll get to Prust. Yes, we'll talk about all the controversy, as they say, in the premiership. But when you look at last night's game, and six goals Carey Price allows, most he's given up all season long, are we seeing who the Montreal Canadiens... Think about this today. Are we seeing who the Montreal Canadiens are when Carey Price is less than spectacular? Because all season long, we kept hearing, they're doing it on the back of Price. They're doing it on the back of Price. Price wasn't Price last night. Is this who the Habs are?
Well, we've said all along that it was a team that was successful, but it had blemishes, that it had shortcomings. And the shortcomings at various times were spotting too many leads, not playing well in first periods, special teams that could be a power play that could be dodgy, a lack of offense, inconsistency in scoring goals. And I think we're seeing all of those elements in this series. Their power play throughout the playoffs has been dreadful. Yep. And a momentum killer on top of not producing. And they're fighting to score goals against this Tampa team.
And maybe Tampa finally woke up.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too. They finally woke, you know, they get themselves through the first round, which you ask numerous teams, you ask players, coaches, management, etc. And we talked about it on this very show. That first round is a dogfight for most teams.
And here's what I wonder. Is that because of a scare? Like, did Detroit throw enough of a scare into Tampa to smarten them up?
No, I don't think it's about that. Well, Detroit's a smart team, first of all. And in the first round, everybody's full of this newfound energy, this new excitement level, this shiny new car, so to speak. And they're driving it at 150 miles or kilometers an hour.
Thank you.
Pick your country.
Thank you.
And it is, you know, everybody's got that antenna up. It's kind of like the first round of the NCAA basketball tournament. First round, where everybody's like, you know, it's... Yeah. And anybody can beat anybody. I mean, yeah, it plays out over a series instead of a one-and-done type of thing, but it's just a very different feeling. Once you get through that first round, you settle in a little bit more. Did it scare them? I don't know if it scared them. I think it kind of helped, say, the Tampa Bay Lightning. We learned, we got through, and now let's keep getting better. And that's how they're approaching it, is every day getting better. Montreal, by the way, and you know what that reminded me of last night, fellas? And people will laugh and whatever, but their play reminded me of what they did to the Boston Bruins last year. Mm. Bruins losing discipline, taking bad penalties, not being able to score in the power play type of thing.
You wonder, too, if this is just the Montreal Canadiens' frustration level boiling over because at the end of this, they're not as good as Tampa, and they can't keep up. Tampa is a fast team. The only team that may rival them by way of speed are the Rangers. This is a quick team, and when they are moving...
Montreal's a pretty fast team, too.
Yeah, but they don't move the puck as quick as Tampa does.
Absolutely, I agree.
Tampa, and we saw this on the power plays last night, the way that Tampa moves the puck around is special, and that's got to be frustrating as a player. If you're a member of the Montreal Canadiens, and you can't do anything, and you're getting beaten to pucks, and these guys have it on a string, and they're bouncing it all around, that's got to be frustrating.
Well, as much as we said, I just want to make the point of everything that was wrong with the Canadiens game, they still generated a lot of chances, and Bishop had to come up with some key saves, and they could have been up 2-0 before all of a sudden it gets tied up. But
how bizarre is that, though? That's all. I agree with you. How bizarre is it, though, that we're seeing the Montreal Canadiens, who are, I don't want to say excelling, but they're doing well, thank you very much, 5-on-5, and it's their special teams that's killing them.
Well, their power play hasn't been great all year. They brought in Gonchar to try and fix him. Their penalty kill was really good all year, though. I mean, give or take, what, 84%, something like, give or take, and top 10, if not top 5 all year in and out of there. And now you're seeing the puck movement being zipped around, and the decoy of Steven Stamkos on that one goal.
Brilliant.
It was brilliant. That was a decoy, and it came through. you know, Montreal's not out of this. They're definitely not out of it, but they got out of their game the last, especially last night. They really got out of their game.
But that, excuse me, that puck movement and speed caused problems all season in that matchup, yep. Tampa, Montreal,
yep.
Which Tampa dominated. So, I mean, the first game goes to overtime. Last night, it just looked like Tampa really had its confidence. Once they got ahead, that puck movement, you started to see it. The power play came to life because theirs was brutal, just slightly worse, or better, rather, than the Canadiens going into that. And all of a sudden, it looked like they were a confident team. And now Stamkos has got the piano off his back.
That's it.
That's a huge element.
I'm glad you got there because it seemed as if, and maybe I'm looking into a story that's not there, but it seemed as if to the point about confidence and playing with that, you know, with that, with those shoulders back and the chest out, that seemed to happen after Stamkos scored.
But there was a game. Yes, I agree. No question. No, and you could literally and audibly, visually and audibly hear him scream.
Oh, I know, yeah.
After that goal,
well, that's
and the celebration.
The Bell Center was definitely kind of quiet.
Yeah, and well, they'll, you know, but still, I mean, it's the irony for the picture. I mean, for TV was beautiful. You know what I mean? It told the story of his relief and his how emphatic that was that he scored. But there was a play in game one. I don't remember the time of the game, but you remember he had an opportunity and he jumped with the puck. He got that acceleration going a little bit more. To me, that even though he didn't score in game one, it was that looked like him right there. And I said to myself, and we talked about it. It might have been with Brad Fay. I'm not sure if you were there. But we talked about it. And we said, to me, that looked like he's getting close. He's getting back. Because I didn't see that jump against the Detroit Red Wings. Whether it was injury, whether it was tired, whether it was just good defense by Detroit. But I saw that in game one, and it came to really out in fruition in game two. And yes, I agree. I mean, that was huge for him.
And the other factor, 2 days off now before they have to play the back-to-backs, having gone through the seven-game series and then an overtime, you know, double overtime in game one, and then, you know, that's a grind for Tampa. So that extra day off may be another factor in their favor.
Should point out as well, David Desharnais did not fly with the team today, but to your point, there is the extra day off, so he could easily, if he's over the illness, fly to Tampa tomorrow.
This is not over. No. I mean, this is, you know, Montreal doesn't get,
you lose
to Ontario thought the opening game was their best game of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you lose it, and, you know, you can and argue about the offside.
Tampa knows it. They're inching their way, as they would like to say it. They're not there yet.
All right.
But I thought Tampa really looked over that last half like a really, really good team. Yeah. That they found it.
Yep.
They found
it. And Ben Bishop. Let's not go any further without talking about Ben Bishop. You talk about Steven Stamkos coming back in the monkey off the back of the piano, as you say, Scott. How about Ben Bishop? At times in that Detroit series, he kind of looked like someone
who
hasn't played an NHL playoff game before, because he had.
Yeah.
Now it's different.
But at the end of the series, he was really good. He seemed to find his confidence as that seventh game, for instance, marched on. And in the first game, he was outstanding. And I think he showed a lot of character. When you think about the goal he gave up on Friday night, the clank off the mid and in it goes, ties it up late.
That's a ready goal, yeah.
But he battled through. And he made some saves after that. And he made some saves in the overtime and then bounces back in game two and was rock solid.
And he made a save. They were down 1-0 in game two last night.
Yeah.
And it was on Mitchell.
Alone.
And he makes the save.
Yeah.
That's huge. I have a lot more. I said on Friday here on Hockey Central, I kind of called Ben Bishop the Riddler. Got that question mark on him because I'm just not sure what I'm going to get out of him. But it's amazing how I'm starting to erase that, you know, a bit more. You bring up the point, which I think is dead on, about that bad goal off his glove and in, and yet he ends up responding to that after game one. And to me, that says an awful lot. If he unraveled, you kidding me? What kind? Even if the Lightning had won, but he kind of didn't look
good. Still fought it, yeah.
We'd be saying different things. He handled it. He handled game two. He might want to look to avoid a little bit of body contact, if possible, a little bit more.
Well, number eight will be in the lineup for game three, it is possible. Let's get to Brandon Prust right now. Not the first time we've seen him bump Ben Bishop. These two have a little bit of a standing history between one another. But the first time we've seen him throw an elbow pad at the bench in a brilliant move. Stamkos flipped it to a fan, which is quite nice. Thank you very much. But is that just a frustrated hockey player? Is that a player that's trying to, quote-unquote, spark his team? Let's draw that cliche out a little bit longer. What do we make of Pruss last night, and why would Braden Coburn go after him like that?
Well, remember, there was an incident earlier in the game that he took it for the team, Braden Coburn, and took a few jabs, and there was the penalties and minors that happened on Pruss then. Why would he go after him right there? I think he just figured the game was done. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to make that proverbial statement, so to speak, that I'm here for my team. What was Pruss doing? Pruss is just trying to get anything involved. I mean, the Bell Center, you could feel it through the TV watching it here, and, you know, in the green room here watching it, it was dead. I mean, it was dead, and he was just trying to bring something for his team. I don't know. I thought Montreal was undisciplined all game long.
You could hear the footsteps of people walking up the aisles
to
leave while the game was going on.
Yeah.
How bad it was.
You could hear Yuppie talking.
with Scott Oak, as a matter of fact. I know.
I was just going to say, but with Coburn, you got to pick your spots. And he was disciplined early in the game and avoided the situation because of the circumstance, the time of the game, the score of the game. Later on in the game, I think it's the right time to send a message back to say, hey, buddy, if you're going to keep running the goalie, eventually you're going to pay for it.
And it wasn't like this massive fight. It was just
he just stepped in and answered it.
The game was done, so here I'm ready.
Yeah,
type of thing.
And by engaging with him, you knew you took him out of the game, and you protected your goalie that way.
The allegations with Brad Watson, the bleep 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 in the bench and the finger pointing, and then the
wait. Let me put on my shocked face.
I know. But here becomes the question.
Like it never happened before.
Opinion is
nobody talks on the ice.
Yeah. No, opinion is split on this one. On the one hand, you may say to yourself, well, good for Prust. Official behaves in that way. Feel free to speak about it. The other side is, what happened to it's welcome to the jungle out there? And we don't talk about what we say.
What happened?
We,
wait
say,
a second.
Things,
what,
we
what,
say things in the heat
did
of the
anybody
moment.
Ask Brennan what he said to the official?
I don't. You know, all he said
all
was,
he said was, I told him I thought it was a soft call.
Yeah.
Do you think he said it that way?
No. I think there's a lot of spice in that chili. When you're in that situation, and you're the nature of the hockey player that Brandon Prust is, I don't believe for one second he's the naive little innocent lamb through all of this. Having said that, going public with what the official said
I think
said
I know where
him,
you're going. As a media guy, I say thanks very much.
I'm just talking
because you just wrote my story for me, and I'm feeling good about that. And give us 5 minutes to talk about
it. We need more of that.
Is he deflecting what happened to the team?
Partly you create an off-day controversy, so today they'll be talking about that. As a follow-up to the game. So you steer that away.
Do you think that was the motivation?
No, I don't think entirely. I think coaches think that way. I'm not entirely sure the players in the heat of the moment think that way. Again, as a media guy, I love what he did.
Sure.
If I'm part of the team and the league, you know what? There's a way you can deal with this, and that's go to the coach and say, okay, I know things are said, but this guy went over the line. In fact, he did. If that's the story he's telling. And then you go to the series supervisor, and it all gets sorted out one way or another. But to your point, at what point do you stop complaining about what's said on the ice? Because there's a lot of horrible things that are said on the ice in the heat of battle.
A lot.
But at the end, you shake hands and go home.
You wonder, too.
Or if you don't even want to shake hands, you don't. You just go home.
You can pay a Lucic.
Yeah, you just go home.
And Billy Smith and just skate off the ice.
Right.
Actually, right. Shook hands.
Handshake alley. Does this make, I mean, let's get yourself in the head of Brad Watson. He's the relief official tonight, by the way, for the Washington New York Rangers game. If you're a member of the Montreal Canadiens now, and Prust has just taken this issue public, do you feel like maybe you're skating with a target on your back? Or has this made you or him a marked team? If you're going to go public with something like this,
it's a chance.
And an embarrassed official, do you not run that risk?
Yeah, of course you do. But, you know, we sit here and we say, and I've, you know, officials are supposed to be unbiased.
Impossible.
Because they're humans.
Right.
Because there's a human element to it. I checked with a few officials that I know, and none of them said that, by the way, that Watson has a godlike way about him.
But by nature of the position, you kind of do because you're running the show.
Right, you're one of the two.
Yeah,
sure, you run that risk, but I think knowing a lot of the officials like I do, I do think that they will all, with regard to the team, no, I think they'll take a deep breath. They'll say, we're out here to do a job. You know, we're out here to do an unbiased job. I think coaches may have that influence on officials more than players at times. You know, there's, you know, coaches, you always talk to guys, say, what's this guy on the bench like? Well, he says nothing. Other guys say, oh, he's always talking. He's always yapping. There's that influence there. Players, you know, they say stuff, but it's different. I mean, this, might be more of an individual thing with Brandon Press, but I think officials will do their best job to wash it, so to speak, and let it go. I really think Press just, like a lot, like the team, you look at the penalties taken in that game, a lot of them were undisciplined. And I think he just continued.
It was an extension of
extension
it.
Extension that right there.
I'm not sure the next refereeing crew, officiating crew, is coming in and saying, we're going to show you for our buddy Brad. I don't think they think that way. And they likely won't see Watson and for another round, if they get to another round. But what you do, I guess, is you can create a mindset, if you're the Canadians, that you start to feel that they're out to get you and feel sorry for yourself, or you create a bit of that us against the world mentality that coaches like to generate.
The irony is, Scotty, is that most teams that go into Montreal think that
absolutely
they're the ones.
The officials are in the pocket.
Yeah, that, you know, there's always...
What, his head office in Montreal?
Where's Clarence Campbell when we need him?
That's the irony.
Quick little thought.
Yeah, that's coming from Boston, where you know that mindset. You know that mindset.
Before we wrap up the Montreal conversation and transition and what happened with the Calgary Flames and their pair of losses against the Anaheim Ducks, did they let Carey Price in there a little bit too long last night? If you're Michelle Therrien, why don't you just take him out of there? Get him out, put it into Karski.
But I think he talked with Stephane Waite and Carey Price and said, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. What's the best thing to do? And he wanted to hang in.
I
would have taken him out personally.
About
avoid
minutes.
Injury.
Yeah.
You know, when the game was starting to get a little bit goofy at both ends with scrums around the net.
Fighters never say they want to quit, but the trainer knows when it's time.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. The fight's over.
I don't know. Carey's, you know, he wanted to stand. I mean, I'm telling you, there's a lot of pride, obviously. This isn't done yet. This isn't done. It was a bad game by the Canadians, but... Mm-hmm. You know, pretty obvious analysis here. If they're going to step up, it's going to be game three. They'll be ready.
You singing from that hymn book, there's more for the Habs to give,
Scott? Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah. You know, I think you saw a real good game in the first one, and then, you know, the lack of discipline was their undoing. And so I think you'll see them come back and have a more controlled game, but they've just got to find a way to... they're creating some chances, but they got to have a stronger forecheck. Yeah. That was key on Friday.
Yeah. Mm.
And they got to solve that power play.
And not putting him on it.
Yeah.
Event summary. Flames and Ducks says 3-0, but it seemed as if it was much, much deeper of a score than 3-0 last night. Anaheim taking care of Calgary.
Oh, I thought the second half of the game,
second period Calgary came on.
I mean, they, you know, I didn't feel like they were throttled. But, I mean, the better team is Anaheim. We know that.
Even though Calgary came on, I wrote myself a note watching the game. It never felt like it was in doubt, though.
Yeah.
That it was going to get away from Anaheim.
And especially the way that Freddie Anderson came through when he had to.
100%.
Key time, key saves. Boy, you want to talk about a mellow dude. I mean, he's just got it.
Whatever happened to crazy goaltenders? They're all the man of Zen now.
You got a hold of them. I don't know. I mean, whatever.
They're still crazy. Mellow, it's just different crazy.
And his goaltending coach there, Dwayne Rolison, was fiery when he played. He was fiery, but I've known Dwayne for a long time, and Rolly talked about learning to let things go off his back, but still he's
when
a fiery.
When did Dwayne ever do that?
Well, everything's relative.
Yeah, I was going to say, he had his great awakening after he retired from the game. I mean, how many times did that guy hit players the back of the head with his waffle?
Oh, beautiful.
That game could have been buried in the first period.
What's that?
That game could have been buried in the first period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Carey Rahmo was just outstanding.
Good choice again by Bob Hartley.
He just seems to know which is the right goaltending card to pull. Billy and I were talking about this before the show went on the air, ScoMo. It seems as if Anaheim almost has a clinical approach, a very buzzsaw, like a relentless. They have this business-like take on the game right now, which is interesting when you consider that their head coach, Bruce Boudreau, is anything but that. But Anaheim seems to almost have this very clinical, every shift, this is what we do. The next line does the same. Rolling again and again and again. And it's relentless, Scott.
But even with Bruce, we haven't seen, haven't seen him animated behind the bench. He's been under control himself. Of course, when you win six in a row, it's easier to do that. But they trailed in three of them against Winnipeg, where you could have been reaching for the panic button at times, given what the pressure that's on this team and history and all the rest of it. But no, I agree. They just look like a group that's very confident. In their skin, in their game, and they just keep rolling. They're big, they're strong, great forecheck. They're moving the puck really, really well.
Oh my God, are they moving the puck beautifully? Yeah. I mean, they're flying up and down. Is it a result of leadership besides Getzlaff and Perry? Do we maybe need to give Kessler a little more credit here, or is that just a
why
now
they got him?
Now
this is exactly why they got him.
How many
times have you seen Getzlaff smiling on the bench? I mean, it's like they're having a good time doing it.
Yeah. I mean, the depth down the middle, now with Nate Thompson back in the lineup, and he's important to that team too, Nate Thompson, mm-hmm. penalty-killing faceoffs, and that depth down the middle is scary. And Beauchemin has done a beautiful job on the back end, helping out Hampus Lindholm, mm-hmm. bringing along young other guys. I think Trent Yawney has done a really nice job as the coach of that team, just dealing with these guys, getting them out there.
Sammy Vatanen as well.
Sammy Vatanen is great. He's the guy that every time he's on the ice, I kind of look at him. I have to remind myself who he is. I'm like, who is that little guy out there dancing around? He's a competitive son of a gun. Oh my gosh, is he ever? No, they're doing this beautiful job. They're not messing around with the puck in their own zone. Therefore, they're getting it out of their own zone, and by doing that, they're making their forwards faster and with the puck and making the plays.
Does Calgary win a game here?
I think one.
What do you think, Scoma?
Maybe one at home.
Make one. It's hard to sweep. It's hard. And listen, Bob Hartley and the Flames have been so proud this year, played so resilient all year. And that's one thing. And I talked to the Anaheim coaches before the series. What are the things you're emphasizing? And that was the first thing.
These guys play hard.
The emphasis on the resiliency of this Flames team. They said we are hammering that home with our guys.
And after being in Winnipeg, going into Calgary for Anaheim, it's going to be they're used to crazy buildings.
Yeah.
So going to affect them in any way. But it's Calgary's resiliency and the way they've battled all year that they've got one in.
The Canadian Killers, the Anaheim Ducks, Calgary Trails, 2-0 heading back to the Saddle Dome in their series against the Anaheim Ducks. Chicago, Minnesota.
That was a game that Jacques Lemaire would love, as my buddy would say,
for
the first half of it.
That's true.
I mean, how about the skill come through when it's almost like a drop of a hat. They haven't done anything, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's Kane. Boom, there's Sharp.
Boom,
there's
Kane,
Hossa.
Goals,
there's Marian Hossa stripping pucks.
Well, that's the thing.
Oh, what a play that was.
Yeah, I know. He's.
Yeah. But he hasn't scored.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
yeah, but
he just does everything else right.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, the makeup of any...
those watching on TV, that was the play there.
The
Tay's goal.
Any Joel Quenneville team, you know, board play is such a big issue. I don't know anyone that plays on the boards better than Marian Hossa. As far as winning battles, I mean, face-offs are exclusively the domain of centermen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But puck battles on the boards, those are like face-offs for wingers. And is there anyone you want on the boards more than Marian Hossa in the NHL?
Datsuk's pretty good, even though he's not big, but he'll strip pucks like that,
yep.
too. Taves is learning. That's one of the things that between Taves and Kane and some other players on the Hawks. By the way, Tara Vinen does a nice job of that already, too. He had a nice play on the Sharp goal.
Listen, everybody on Quenneville's team plays the boards
right,
really
but
well.
But I think they've learned an awful lot of it from Marian Hossa.
Of course.
The last few years that he's been there. Son of a coach, and he's so good. I mean, this Hawk team is it's not all cylinders yet, but they're getting the wins, which is that a good sign or a bad sign? I think it's a bad sign for the rest of the league.
Are we worried about Dubnyk's glove?
That's where they're dining out.
Yeah.
They got that cheapie on.
The only question about Chicago, they've had a touch of goalie-itis
mm-hmm.
a couple times in the playoffs, and that can pop up at any time. It's Darling, it's Crawford. If we're heading towards and it looks like it, Anaheim-Chicago Conference Final.
You're forcing us to go ahead, aren't you?
What's that?
You're forcing us to go ahead. I love these hypotheticals.
Because this one's not over either, so you know.
No, I know. Listen, I know. But if it's heading that way...
Never in trouble until you lose at home.
The wild card in all of it's going to be the Chicago goaltending. Once again.
Well, they said it when they won the Cup. But you know what? I give Crawford... Give him some time, and I give him credit for battling back and see what he can do. He is a Cup winner, mm-hmm. and... Maybe he can find himself and get on a bit of a roll.
He made two unbelievable saves last night, too, and the game was before it was opened up. So, he had the bad goal over the glove. Here's one of them, Kyle Brodziak on the TV side of things there, the left pad, and then it was Zach Parise moments later with the right pad. it's just not, we're just, it's not comfortable always. Put it that way, the way that his style.
He took that one off the melon.
Yeah, he had to change masks, right?
Yeah.
He dinged that one. But I love the kid's competitive nature. I've had a chance to talk to him over the years. Is he perfect? No. I've always said, though, you need the right goaltender mentality for your team. And the guys on the team seem to relish playing with him. Now, they can't have him continue to let up bad goals. Duh. But they seem to be going, and yet they're not quite going to where they want to be. Again, that might not be a good sign for the rest of the league.
And right now, Chicago's best players are at the top of their game. I think Keith was +4 in that game. Mm-hmm. Kane was marvelous. What a big, beautiful goal that he scored.
Minnie jumps up, though, at home. Minnie's going to be ready.
It's a tough team to play against. Sharp. Mm-hmm. You talk to anyone in the Western Conference down the stretch, and what do they all say? You don't want Minnesota. There's a hard team to play against. But, man, when Chicago clicks, when that...
They get the stretch plays going. They get the speed going. They get the skill. Kane goes, he picks it up in stride, and he goes far post. And then Sharp did the same thing, other far post. I mean, these guys have just got so much skill, and the shots are spectacular, the releases.
The Rangers don't make things easy for themselves, do they?
No, but I think that... obviously a huge victory for them on Saturday afternoon. What a great sports day on Saturday. And
about the Otters and the Greyhounds. Yeah,
that was part of it. We had what a great day. This was an awesome game between the Rangers and the Caps. Just awesome. They don't make it easy, but they're playing a tough team, and they know that in the Washington Capitals. Somebody asked me about an interview yesterday. Who would feel better about themselves after the split? And even though the Rangers won game two, I would say the Caps. I would say the Caps. We didn't play great on Saturday. They didn't have that same overall tenacious physical front, but they still found a way to be in the game, and they got the split. I think they feel a little bit better, but this is a series that so far has gone the way I expected. I expect this one to be a long one.
Well, you got the split and you're going home, so you feel good about that too. And
you have the best player right now, maybe in the game, maybe right now in Alexander
doing
Ovechkin.
A lot of great things on the ice, not just scoring highlight reel goals, being physical, blocking shots, playing both ends of the rink.
Awesome.
Yeah. He's been a joy to treat to watch.
This is almost like a year. His whole year has been like this. He's really having just an amazing presence here, Jeffy, in the playoffs, especially these first two games against the Rangers. But, we've seen some guys kind of change a bit this year. Ovechkin has taken it upon himself. Erik Karlsson, he changed my opinion of him in the second half of the year. He got better and better he got better. Don't give me the look. I'm saying not perfect, but
that's when Mark Bethot came back, though.
That's part of the equation.
Everybody has a winger.
Joel Ward is helping Alexander Ovechkin by being the smart, responsible. It's a team game. I can't be any good. Some would argue I'm not without you guys here. All right, but my point is,
all right, you're stretching it now.
I know. my point is, I think we're starting to see guys at that, I'll call it the gray hair level, starting to recognize it. That I need to change a little tweakage here and there. Ovechkin, to me, is the prime example of that, maturity in his game.
And a coach that got to him, and maybe to your point, Billy, and I totally agree, is that maturity and looking at it and saying, the window's closing a little bit here. And I've had a lot of times when I've been on the big stage and did it my way, whether it was playoffs, Olympics, World Championships, and it didn't work. So maybe I should listen to what this guy has to say.
It started with the Las Vegas conversation.
Yep.
Between Barry Trotz and Alexander Ovechkin, and has carried through. And beginning of the season, how many times did Barry Trotz significantly for Alexander Ovechkin limit his minutes? And we're all saying to ourselves, "You see what number 8? How come he's only at 14 minutes? Is there an issue with the coach? This is not going to work. Barry Trotz going to be another casualty of Alexander Ovechkin." But quite the opposite, to your point, Scott.
Well, and the message was, I'm not telling you I don't want you to have the puck, and I'm not going to tell you what to do when you have the puck. It's when you don't have the puck, that's when you got to listen to what I'm saying.
That, though, goes against the motto of Vegas, so what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So there goes the slogan
What happens on the rink doesn't necessarily stay on the rink either, as we saw last night, too.
No, but Ovechkin's attitude has been, his overall on-ice demeanor has been, it's been scary good. Mm-hmm. It's been so effective. He's not going at it. I mean, he went at it alone in the sense of that goal that, on Saturday. But again, that's just not many players, if any, can do that like that.
Not quite the goal against the Coyotes that we saw early in his career.
Oh, no, where he fell down.
He's still swimming. No. And he makes the goal.
And he's gone from minus 35 to plus whatever it was in the regular season. And 53 goals at a time when scoring 50 goals is really an accomplishment.
And utilizing
always has been, but ever even more so.
We always said he doesn't make players around him better. Crosby does. He's starting to make those around him better. That was always a knock on Ovechkin. He doesn't make those around him better. He's starting to make, I mean, case in point, game one, the pass to Joel Ward. He's making those around him better now. Now, again, we always have
tough
this.
Tough to do as a winger, though. That's
fair enough. There has to still be some element of making guys on his line better. He's starting to do that more. There's always going to be that caveat, though, but we need to keep seeing him do it. But we always talk about players not being playoff performers. You started with Ben Bishop. He hadn't played a playoff game yet. Now we're starting to see it. Well, we're starting to see it with Ovechkin, too, at this point of his career.
We'll take a break on that one. Saturday was a wonderful affair if you're a sports fan, and why would you be listening to this program right now if you weren't? Between the NHL game, the Rangers facing off against the Caps, the Kentucky Derby, the, I don't want to call it a fight, but a boxing match between Mayweather and Pacquiao, and also Connor McDavid and the Erie Otters winning the OHL's Western Conference Championship. They'll face off against the Oshawa Generals for the J. Ross Robertson Cup. We'll talk a little bit about Connor McDavid and a preview of tonight's Rangers-Capitals game when we return. Hockey Central at noon along the Sportsnet radio and television networks, simulcast stateside on the NHL Network.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard alongside Billy Jaffe and Scott Morrison. News coming out of Winnipeg as it relates to their American Hockey League affiliate. But up first, cue the horns. Let's hear those trumpets. Time for the Hockey Central Three Stars. I'll go junior hockey style back to Saturday. Big win by the Erie Otters. They win the Wayne Gretzky Trophy, top team in the Western Conference. Final score is 7-3, 5 points for Connor McDavid, like breaking sticks. And he was fantastic and continue to be fantastic all playoff long. The young man has 42 points in only 15 playoff games, averaging in the regular season. You love this one, ScoMo. 2.6 points per game in the regular season, 2.8 in the playoffs. McDavid and the Erie Otters will face off against the Oshawa Generals in the OHL.
And doing it against a really good team in the Sioux.
Good point. Knocking off the number one team in the country, the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. So best of luck to Connor McDavid and the rest of the Otters the rest of the way. Billy.
Well, I'll go with the Great Dane, Freddie Anderson. And
is every hockey player of Danish descent nicknamed the Great Dane? Because when Nikolaj Ehlers gets to the Winnipeg Jets, you know that'll be his nickname as well.
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, Franz Nielsen was
better than Danish pastry. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's true. That's really. Yeah, you don't want to be as soft as a Danish, or you know. And, I think that because he's so big, 6'4", almost 6'5", and 230 pounds, I think that's why the Great Dane, because of the size of him right there. He is. I don't know what the word is in Danish for mellow or calm, but that's what he is. And he's just made some great saves. He's been really, really active in a sense of knowing when to make the move. But he's not flailing around. And so 30 saves, 6 wins in a row now in the playoffs. Fred Anderson gets it.
Well, we gave mine away earlier in the show when we were talking about Tampa and Montreal, and it's Ben Bishop. Mm-hmm. The way he bounced back from that goal with the clank off the mitt and in, ties it up in a crazy Bell Center, and he comes back and is rock solid in the overtime. And then again, and especially in the first period when the Canadians came at him hard in game two, and had an excellent outing. And so I think he just showed a lot of character on top of a lot of ability to be a very good goaltender.
You know, knowing how physically engaged Ben Bishop is in every single game, do you get the impression, because I do, that he doesn't mind getting bumped?
That no, he, a lot
when
of
you're
goals,
6'7", a lot you, of goal, 250, well, you can take, a, I think take the
kind,
odd knock.
I think he kind of digs it, and it wakes him up.
Keeps him in. Yeah. Keeps him involved right there and maybe plays the game a bit and is willing to take one for the team, so to speak. Remember, early in the year, he had that physical confrontation with Brandon Prust. He went at him there, too. So we know about the history of that between the two of them. He is a very active netminder.
And you had mentioned earlier about Canadians needing to get a good forecheck going. Well, he's part of the reason why they don't have a good forecheck going, because he handles the puck so well.
And real quick, just another star of the week, or weekend, I should say, the USA sled hockey team. And for, not just the U.S., but also U.S., Canada, all the teams that participated in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I just finally saw some of the highlights. I got to tell you something. Those are amazing athletes. Mm-hmm. Those are amazing athletes. So, yes, U.S. won. I'm not getting patriotic. I'm saying these guys are stars. The way that they play and the way they move around, I was blown away. So, those guys, congrats, stars.
Absolutely. Want to send out a quick note as well to our friend in Columbus.
Oh, yeah, Billy Davidge, coach, the man who has been battling some cancer stuff, undergoing some treatments. Hopefully he's listening or watching today, and he is so strong, and keep kicking its, you know, cancer's backside, please.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Best from us to you, Bill, as you continue your fight. News out of Winnipeg, not as it relates to the Jets, but in a way it does. It's that organization. The Manitoba Moose have returned to the American Hockey League. So the goofy guy with the antlers and the hockey stick returns to jerseys everywhere along the American Hockey League. MooseHockey.com. Will be relaunched.
It's back.
It's still my favorite logo in hockey. Is that? But the original Moose, before they went to the serious Moose, the goofy Moose, the lovable one. Anyway,
tough for St. John's.
Tough for St. John's and our friend Brian Rogers, longtime play-by-play voice, whether it's with the St. John's Maple Leafs or with the St. John's Ice Caps. I really want hockey to work out there, but it just every time they try it, it's
location,
well,
unfortunately.
It. And what we're seeing now with NHL squads as well, the closer you can have your primary minor league affiliate to the parent club, the better. And
sure.
Call-ups
for so many reasons.
100%.
And especially, we always talk about call-ups, right? We talk about the travel, and that's important. That's huge. But we also, you know, teams now have such an extended coaching staff. Every team has specialists now, training specialists, physically, the strength and conditioning guys, but they also skill guys that they use as consultants that come in regularly. Now you can have them be on the ice with their team that much more. You can see them more. Your management can see them more. You know, it just makes so much sense.
Here's where it helps too, psychologically, from a player's point of view. I was talking to one player from the ex St. John's Ice Caps, now Manitoba Moose, at the gym on Thursday, and he said, when we're playing out, and like next year's going to be all different. Playing in St. John's, we have a feeling like we're not even on the radar. At least now you're playing in Winnipeg, and hey, look, Chevy's here. Mm-hmm. Or hey, look, Chipman's here. Or there's people from the organization, and you don't feel as isolated away from their parent team as you would if you were playing a couple of provinces away.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get feedback quicker?
Yep.
More? That face-to-face contact is so big. I mean, communication is huge, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what these teams in Anaheim talked about that. Now, Bob Murray has a 40-minute drive, or 4 hours, depending on traffic, probably. But no, he has
that California division.
Right. He's got that now. He can actually go see, not have to rely on scouting and video.
Yeah.
He can actually go see regularly. It's so important to be able to have that.
It's huge. And when you're the Winnipeg Jets and you have players like Nick Petan and Josh Morrissey, you mentioned Nick Ehlers a couple of seconds ago, you want to have these guys as close as possible. Because you have, if you're Winnipeg, man, the future is bright in Manitoba because there are some elite-level players that are coming in.
And look, San Jose's doing the same thing, too. They're going to play their minor league with the Barracudas, right?
Yep.
And at the Tank. So you're going to have a lot of fish swimming there. You're going to have sharks and Barracudas with sharp teeth, both of them. So
The front office.
Exactly. And does that continue that trend? I mean, I think so. I don't know how many more teams need to move their minor league teams, but we've really seen such a seismic shift almost this offseason. Dave Andrews does a really good job of helping get that American League situated. He's done he's worked his backside off.
I've always said Dave Andrews is the best general manager the NHL never had. And the way that he's been able to work the American Hockey League, and every year, this was a big one because this was sea change.
Huge.
This was really was, and you're going into a lot of new markets, ECHL markets, to bring in American Hockey League teams. Quick note as well: Peter Chiarelli, met with Todd McClellan at the World Championships. As coaches become available, that one seems, he's a Western guy, coached in Swifty. That one would seem to be a fit for the Oilers, but it seems as if everybody's name was attached to the Oilers.
Well,
Babcock,
why not?
Hitchcock, McClellan.
Well, the other bit of news was that he's going to watch some more of Grand Rapids, which advanced past the Marlies yesterday.
Yes.
But Babcock eventually is going to find his way to the World Championships as well, where there's going to be a congregation of general managers there. So who knows?
None of this surprises.
Watching the Grand Rapids Griffins, you have to imagine that Jeff Blashill's not long for the American Hockey League.
No.
There's another one. And last year, teams were knocking, looking for Jeff Blashill, and Detroit said...
extended him.
Not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Well, the sense seems to be, I think we're going to get an answer fairly quickly as to what Mike is going to do. And I think Ken Holland has said, you know, in fairness to the organization, we can't be handcuffed. And if Blashill is wanted and they don't want to stand in his way, I would think. But they would also probably like to secure his status within the organization.
Listen, I mean, you got big names. I know we've talked about this before, but big names that have decisions to be made. Babcock, Hitchcock. Coach Julian, who's a great coach with the Bruins, you know, where's his scenario?
Does that decision not get made until the new GM's in place?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
When is the new GM? You're pretty tied into Boston. Any idea, timeline, when there could be a new GM there?
My guess would be within the next, I'm going to guess, 2 weeks. I'm going to guess.
Sweeney?
But he's one of the finalists from everything that you hear. But you know what? There's been all the smoke signals out there. I mean, there's been a lot of,
I think there's a report that there was a short list of four.
Down to four. I saw that as well. But my guess is that, you know, Don Sweeney is right in there. And there's a few other guys that have talked with Mr. Jacobs and Cam Neely and other ones. And they make a decision. And then they've got themselves a very good coacher that they have to make. The new GM needs to make a decision on as well. But all these guys are good coaches. All of them. That's we talk about.
Yeah,
a
you don't get to that level being a stiff.
Exactly. Well, and you know, there's how about we?
Okay, the odd one has along the way.
Seriously, you've covered this game pretty long, Scott.
But a seismic shift in, we talk in the American League with the whole new division and teams. But how about in the coaching? We haven't had an off season like this for coaching potential moves. Not like this.
With these big names.
That's
out there.
My point.
With Jack Adams coaches out there. Absolutely.
Well, and real big names. In limbo, if you will.
Exactly.
Not just the guys who are out there looking, but the ones who are sitting there waiting to find out, you know, the Hitchcocks, the Julians, am I coming back?
Mm-hmm.
And then you wonder what happens to coaches like the Guy Bouchers, for example, like the Dallas Aikens, these types of NHL coaches that are, like everybody else, sitting by their phone.
It's going to be uncomfortable for these guys. It's going to be. You know, we always sit there and say on the outside, it's got to be easy. It's great. Look, they're making all this money. Oh, it's no problem. Their stomachs are churning. Where are they going to be? They got families, too. They have lives and livelihoods.
And then when they get a job, it's one of the most demanding, stressful things they will do their entire life. Like when you talk to coaches, and you guys do all the time, when you talk to coaches, you see what they go through from 1 year to the next. It's harrowing.
Look at their hair color.
You age fast. Yeah. You age quick behind the bench. Like that's the time machine right there. But it's not going backwards. It's going forward.
On Coach's Corner, I saw that they at the end of one of the segments, they had an up-close of the kit that was on the Rangers bench. Behind it there, they Don had gotten in on the Tums. I mean, I think it's either Tums, Zantac, Prilosec, whatever. They should have a sponsorship with the coaches. It should be the coaches should form their own union and have an agreement with a stomach issue company.
Not a bad idea. 60 seconds left in the show. What do we expect tonight? It's 7:30 Eastern, Rangers and Capitals. Game 3, Randorf, Galley, Cassie Campbell, Pascal alongside the studio crew.
I expect awesomeness tonight. They're going to rock the red, and it's going to be crazy. The series is now settled in 1-1. Scotty, I think this is going to be a big game tonight. Fun game and electric.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. High speed.
Most
fast
physical
paced,
game.
Physical.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Caps will come out really rocking hard.
Hey, normally it's the road team that comes out and pushes, and the home team's got to hold on. But you kind of get the feeling the opposite is going to happen tonight in that first 10 minutes.
You mentioned about the Anaheim looking like a controlled team. That's how I feel about
Washington.
The Rangers. But Washington has a degree of that in their game as well.
I'm getting that same thing about the Caps, and that's probably Barry Trotz.
And that's a deep
Trotz
team.
Effect. All right, so tune in for that tonight, 7:30 Eastern. Studio crew, Strombo, Kipper, Rudy, and Elliot Friedman. Play-by-play broadcast crew, Randorf, Galley, and Cassie Campbell-Pascal. On behalf of Billy and Scott, great afternoon.